Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 100 Year Real Estate Investor. We're your host, Jake and Gino, and this is the show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, you like the shirt today?
Dude, you're looking dressed down. You're looking like me today. What's going on with that, man?
Once a year, I got to dress down. And I like the Wheel of Our Profits. I like the logo. I said, let me show my boy, Jake. I know you were in pink today, so I said, let me go.
You're looking sharp, big baller. So got a special guest today. Today's guest is Jared Yellen. He is the co-founder of 10X Incubator. As a non-technical tech founder, I got that one out. He found a way to scale his original tech company with $0 invested to over 40,000 paying users from around the world. So without further ado, Jared, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Honored to be here. I love what you're doing. I love the message. This is something that everybody needs. Like, the level of financial literacy is extremely poor. And I hope that parents are listening to this with their kids, because they need to learn this through osmosis so they can have a long-term vision on what their financial future is. So ask me anything. I'm here to answer questions. Let's rock and roll.
Awesome. So before we get into it too much, tell us a little bit about the incubator, because it's such a fascinating thing that you have going on before we get into some long-termism.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I'm what you call a non-tech founder. So there's not an engineering bone in my entire body. I know how to write marketing copy and I know how to sell. Almost 11 years ago, though, I launched a company called Cinduit. And my vision for Cinduit was to build the simplest marketing software in the world and then pre-populate it with content across every major industry, and then sell it to small business owners, a true done-for-you marketing solution for chiropractors and yoga instructors and real estate professionals and financial service professionals. And in my mind, this was genius. I'm like, there's no one doing this, but I didn't know where to start. Like, I'm a non-technical tech founder. So I figured, let me just start by leveraging my skill, which is like a right marketing copy and I could sell. So I did that. I got two very high profile people to hire me to become their direct response marketing copywriter. We did a performance deal. I would earn 30% of anything I produced for them. And I made them millions and millions of dollars. So I did well myself, but more than the money, they just told everybody about me. And within 14 months, those two clients turned into almost 400 clients. And we were running a really large digital and creative agency. And it was a great company, big team, big office, awesome clients, very cash flow positive, but a means to an end. I just wanted to launch this tech product. And in 2011, I had clarity of what that product would do. So I began interviewing different software development firms all throughout the US. I hired one in Boston that had a very good track record. They said it would take 10 months and $750,000 to build the first version. And ended up taking 2 years and $2 million. And I self-funded the entire thing. So I became a statistic in that moment. And I made a commitment that no one else would become a statistic from that point going forward. And I'm going to find some way to make the technology industry safe, because so many people that have these tech ideas, they go down that route and they just get burned because they just don't know any better. And then as a result, they're left with either nothing or something that was way more expensive than what they thought. Part of that journey was I met my now CTO. His name is Mani. Before Mani was working with me, he lived in India and he ran his own software development firm out of his parents' apartment. 3 years later, it had 100 employees. He sold the company, moved to the US to start a family, and he was living on the end of my street where my original office was in Englewood, New Jersey. So we were just meant to unite. He became my CTO in 2014, gave me a chance to build our own team in the US, in Canada, and in India. We ended up setting up a company in India in 2017 just to employ our Indian teams. They could be employees versus contractors. We scaled that team very quickly, which then directly led to my catalyst at Cinduit, which was going from a few thousand users to now over 40,000 active paying users across 30 industries. So it's really come a long way. But part of that journey, and this is where it's really interesting for the theme of this, of your podcast, is in April of 2020, I woke up one day and I realized I'm officially obsolete at Cinduit, which should be every entrepreneur's dream. Like, find a way to
build a well-oiled machine. Yes.
Yeah. Like, find a way to have to be needed. And I was not needed and not wanted. The team's like, you're just in the way. Like, go find something else to do. So I'm like, cool. So I'm 35 years old, happily married, two beautiful children. We got a great life. And I'm thinking to myself, what's next? And I declare that what was next for me was my moonshot. I'm going to do something that shakes up the world, or I'm going to go down trying. And all that I could see was I need to do what I just did with Cinduit, but 10,000 more times over the next 10 years. So I called up Mani, who is still my CTO at Cinduit, and this woman, Katie, who's my director of operations. And I said, I have an idea. I'm going to do it with or without both of you, but I can't imagine not having
you. Poaching the old team, the gang's back together again.
I'm poaching them. And I'm like, let's build, scale, and sell 10,000 tech companies over the next 10 years. Are you in? And their exact words were, "We're in because it's you. We have no idea what you're talking about." So I said, "Okay, let me explain. We're going to launch a tech incubator, but this is not going to be like every other incubator or accelerator where we invest a little money and then offer mentorship in a classroom for 3 to 6 months. That's cool. That's just not this. What this is a place for entrepreneurs from around the world to pitch us their tech ideas that they've scribbled on a napkin, so like our concept, or a minimum viable tech product, so a prototype, or even a cash flowing tech company. And when they pitch us, they want partnership. And what we're looking for are four things: the right person with the right idea in the right market and the right business model. If those four things are present, they get partnership. We co-found the company. We both take equity in the company, so our values are completely aligned. And then we build the entire company at cost. We become the infrastructure, software development, go-to-market, sales, customer support, legal, fundraising, financing, everything. And about 99% of the initial investment, the minimum viable product investment, is at cost in India in a company that I've owned since 2017. So the risk is low and the cost is low. So in June of 2020, we opened up our doors in the portfolio. And since then, we've had over 15,000 people apply to work with us. About 600 of them had a chance to pitch us. It was like their Shark Tank moment. And we've said yes to 130. So we have 130 companies we've co-founded in pretty much the first year, which is more remarkable than 10,000 in 10 years, because that was the year for us to figure all of this out. But we are playing a long game here. That's what this is about. It's building long-term recurring wealth for everybody who's involved, from our co-founders to our team, and then to all of the investors that have participated in some way, shape, or form. So that's the journey, and we're well on our way.
What do you do that other people don't in relation to long-term thinking?
I just don't let go. I really think this is the key. I was thinking about this opportunity to have this conversation with you. I'm like, what has allowed me to be such a long-term entrepreneur? And it's the fact that I literally don't let go. Like, when I know that there's some impact that is meant to be had, and there might be just like one thing standing between me and that impact, I just persevere endlessly. And that's what I've done. Like, I don't do anything for short-term gain, like ever. Like, that is not what excites me. People will come to me all the time and they'll say, "Hey, do you want to be an affiliate and launch my info product?" And that's awesome that they're doing it. I just won't support it, because that's not what I'm here to do. I don't care about the transactional opportunities that are here. I care about building valuation. And one of our investors in our incubator is Grant Cardone. And I'm sure you guys obviously know who Grant Cardone is. I'm sure your audience knows as well. And he's a long-term thinker with regards to wealth. That's how he's built his wealth. And our first conversation we had was about an event that he hosts called GrowthCon. And at GrowthCon, a few years ago, had 40,000 people in the room. He rented out the stadium, the Miami, the Marlins stadium, like the whole stadium. He had filled over 40,000 people. And one of the speakers owns a tech company, and he pitched from stage, and he pitched for 90 minutes, and he made $3.5 million from stage, which is a pretty solid 90 minutes. And I said to Grant, "How much money did you make as a result of that person pitching from stage?" And he said about $1.5 million was like his percentage. I'm like, "Cool. How much money do you think he made?" And he goes, $2 million. Just do the math. I'm like, "See, that's what he did not make. What he made was valuation. He probably made $50 million of valuation. And when he sells his tech company for $1 billion, how much money is Uncle G going to get?" He's like, "Nada." And I'm like, "So that's transactional. Like, that's not long-term thinking." And it shifted his whole psychology, really, because he's obviously a long-term thinker. That's how he's built his wealth in real estate. But he wasn't doing it in his other business, which is Cardone Trading Technologies. And now they've started thinking long-term. They started thinking exponential about what can we do to produce valuation over the course of time.
How do you see companies like that, educational companies and whatnot, growing and actually getting valuations? Because they're typically led by someone like a Grant, right? But there's intrinsic value there, and they throw off cash flow. But what is it, from the buying side? Are these companies being traded now, and is there true value in those types of organizations?
You have to get paid on performance. Like, that's the next era of the figurehead company. Because selling information is there's no valuation to it. Like, there's no like multiplier to it, right? Like, even Grant's company, like, now they've moved down this path. But if they didn't, like, hopefully Grant lives forever, but at some point
he won't. Like, what has changed though in terms of that organization to create value, or a saleable organization?
What he's doing with me. So he invested in our incubator and he launched his own version of it. So now he's focused on building valuation within tech companies. What he's doing is Cardone Ventures. So he has a business partner in Cardone Ventures. His name is Brandon Dawson. And Cardone Ventures is a management consulting organization and private equity firm that invests in more mature businesses and takes meaningful ownership in them. And that's building real valuation. So he's deploying what he teaches from Cardone Training Technologies into now businesses that he has equity in. And that's why I say performance. So like any thought leader that is just making money from their personal brand, but not getting compensated based on having equity in the things that they're educating into, is just playing the transaction game. And they should find a way very quickly to start exchanging what they get paid transactionally for equity. And if they're really good at what they do, that's going to become exponentially more valuable than anything anybody would pay.
You know, transactions pay the bills.
Equity makes you rich, my friend. Yeah. And if it don't cash flow, you let the grass grow. Those are the two sayings that we sort of live by. And, you know, transactions are really sexy. People love it. And, you know, we were talking about the psychology. People love to capture those gains. You know, we did a show last week, Jake, and I think the author was Howard Marks, talking about Amazon. When you bought it at $5, it went up to $600. Hey, you made a great thing. You know, but how many people have held it for the last 20 something years and made a 600x investment? It's a very difficult thing to do. It's about psychology. It's about ego. So
we've sold very few of our multifamily assets. And I'm still pissed about this one because we thought we were so damn cute. We bought it at 40 a door. We sold it at 100. Damn, we're so good, man. Easily worth 150 a door right now, and I feel like an asshole. We caught half the run up on it, and it's just like, what the hell are we doing, man?
Jake, can I give you a little advice on that one? I'm gonna sing a little something to you, Jake.
Oh,
let
shit,
it go, let it go.
No, I'm not letting it go. I'm learning from that shit. Okay, I'm learning from that shit. Hey, and kudos to you. You took the stodgy old Cardone there, you know, Mr. Real Estate, and you expanded his mind clearly. So you know, you're an educator as well, man.
So when we met, so it's interesting because I was already doing all this, and then he heard about me, and he's like, this dude is crazy or he's on to something, but I got to meet him. So they invited me to come to his office about 9 months ago from the time of this interview. And I didn't know him personally at all. I knew of him, obviously, the way that millions of people know of him. But I went out to the meeting. I had no intention of anything. Like it was more of like, let's just meet and see what we can do. But I had like no plan. There was like no proposal. Like there was nothing. It was just a meeting. And we ended up meeting for 4 hours, actually. It was a long meeting. And it was a meeting talking about values, our desire to create an even playing field, our family. Like it was like depth. Like I got to really got to know Grant, like as a husband, as a father, and as a leader within his organization. And about an hour into the meeting, he said to me, Jared, that chair you're sitting in right there, my sales team sells that chair for $100,000 an hour. And people make the investment, and then I put the money into my foundation, because he's a foundation that helps children that don't have a father figure, because that was his life. And people come out and they have an hour with me, and they can do anything they want in that hour. They could pitch me, they can ask me for advice, we can have lunch together, like it's their hour. And here's what I know. You didn't spend 100 grand to sit in that chair because I invited you here, and you're not asking for anything. So I'm gonna ask you for something. And he stood up, he said, I wanna support you, I wanna invest in you, and I wanna build, scale, and sell 10,000 tech companies over the next 10 years. So he did, he invested, and he ended up launching his own version of an incubator with us as well. But the reason why I believe he said that is I said to him, Grant, your real estate thing is cute and tech is sexy. And he wants sexy. I think that's what the trick
is. Dude, you're feeding the ego, man. Good for you.
Love that. Let me, Jared, take me back to the time. Young Jared, short-term mindset. When was that pivotal moment when you went from that short-term mindset and it just translated over to the long-term mindset? There's a story, there's a you know, part of your life that you can remember.
So it actually had nothing to do with wealth. It was so when I was in college, I was, and I still am pretty intense, but I was fanatical about fitness. So I was a natural bodybuilder that never competed. It was just for me. And I'd go to the gym for hours every day, and I'd wear sweatpants and a sweatshirt. No one had any idea what I looked like because it was all baggy clothes. But I was a beast, and I was really strong, and I would incline bench press over 400 pounds. And
for those of you who don't know, that's a good push.
Yeah, four plates. It was big. And I used to find the smallest person in the gym at the time, because I had, by the rule of the gym, was somebody had to spot you if you were over two plates. So I had four. So I would find the smallest person in the gym or a female. And
I hope you got two of them, put them on each side.
That was what I didn't do, because that would have made it, that would have given me an out. So I had the smallest person standing there who I know could not help me. And they freak out. They were like, what do you mean? I'm like, just stand there because I have to have someone.
Bullshit. You're trying to pick up chicks. Come on, dude.
So they're like, well, what happens if you get stuck? I won't be able to help you. And I'm like, well, that's why I won't get stuck, because you won't be able to help me. So I used to push weight like that. And then when my daughter was born, I one day was just playing with her and I stepped over one of her toys and my back went out and I literally could not get up off the floor. Like, it was just out, and it's just wear and tear from that level of not thinking long term. And that was the moment where my whole psychology shifted. I'm like, this is not worth it. Like, I don't need to go that extreme. Like, I need to have a long term horizon on my health, my relationships. Me as an entrepreneur, I was one of those entrepreneurs that was willing to bleed to get to the outcome. And then I created this whole new criteria, which is I'm not willing to bleed, but I will sweat. And that's like my new filter. Like, is it blood or is it sweat? Because I don't want to bleed. I'll sweat. Like, sweat's healthy. Mm-hmm. So everything, my investments, like everything changed because I threw my back out when my daughter was like 6 months old and I couldn't pick her up. And I'm like, I don't want to ever do something for the short term that prevents me from having what I ultimately desire.
Blame the Barbie doll. That's what it is. I got you, right?
Was your wife one of those chicks spotting you? Be honest. Is that how you hooked her or what?
I would have freaked her out. I was a maniac. I was nuts.
Okay, so I want to speak to the younger guys here, because ultimately so many, you know, folks come on our team. They may, you know, they want to get there, and we call it the get there-itis. What can you say, and especially for young guys, 25, 26 years old, come and join the team. And it's, let's buy every freaking deal that we see. Let's get everything in the door. And it's just this, it's short-termism. What can you say to these, I don't want to call them kids, but it's generally in our experience, the younger guys that come aboard that struggle with this, and it's good in a way because they're not satisfied. Right. And that's what we like about them. But sometimes they try to push it to the point where it's like, we could potentially make bad decisions. Getting a deal that's built in the 60s just because the price per door is right. You know, that kind of example. What do you say to the younger guys out there?
So you have to pick your hard. This is like not even just investing. This is life.
Yeah.
Like, pick your hard. And there's two routes of life. You could take the easy hard route, or you could take the hard easy route. But you got to pick your hard, because at some point it's going to be hard. And what almost everybody does, whether it's investing, whether it's their relationships, whether it's their health, is they pick the easy to hard route. So let's just not make it about investing for a moment.
Sure.
Make it about people making healthy decisions, right? The easy route, like today, is to hit snooze and not go to the gym, right? But life gets progressively more difficult later on when all of a sudden you have autoimmune challenges because you didn't take care of yourself earlier on, versus if you do the hard up front, like you go to the gym, you create the discipline, life gets easier. Like, you're in your 60s and 70s and you're vital and vibrant. So investing is no different. You just got to pick your heart. Like, and if you're willing to make the harder, longer term decisions on the front end, everything about life gets easier, like everything. But at some point you got to do hard. Like, that's just what it is. And that's what I would encourage the young person to realize, is that pick your heart. Would you rather be hard when you're in your 20s, when you have like no one to be responsible to other than yourself? Or would you rather be hard when you're in your 60s or 50s? You have to rely on your kids to financially support you, because at some point it's going to be hard. You just got to pick when that is.
But Jared, let me ask you though, even someone in their 50s, they can still pick hard. They can decide to say, you know what, I've screwed up for the last 30 years. I love your book, The Gap and the Gain, right? We're living in the gap world. Well, look at the gain, look at all that you've accomplished, but it's time to do hard. It's time to stop complaining. And that one word that defines long-termism, it's responsibility. Be responsible. Don't rely on anybody or anything, right? If you want to be healthy, start today. Start the hard today. And you're not going to be, you know, if you've had 30 or 40 years of crappy habits, don't expect to take a pill and 2 weeks later, you're going to be great. Expect it to suck for months. And that's what long-termism is all about. And you will see those incremental results after 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Listen, I just started singing opera about 8 months ago.
Right? Here we go.
I love teasing Jake with this. And I've got a natural voice. I'm Italian. I'm a dramatic tenor. A name like Barbaro. Come on. And I'm natural.
Did you see him coming out? He starts puffing the chest out when he's talking about the opera. That's his true passion right now. Here we go.
But the reason why is I wanted to become a novice and I wanted to suck at something. Because when my opera teacher of, you know, been singing opera for 40 years, he told me to sing something the first time. I want to start singing Guns N' Roses. I didn't know Enrico Caruso. I didn't know any of that shit. So I sucked, and I still suck, because it's getting back down to the basics, back down to the foundations. 8 months, everybody. Wednesday choir, Friday practice, and Sunday singing at church. It's my 3 days, and I do about 10 minutes a day. So, and I'm still not even that great. I have so much more potential, but the
actually sounded pretty good. If I'm giving a little dues, you know, G-Dad's coming around with it, so.
But it takes a lot of hard work and it's responsibility.
He's like, yeah, I know.
No, I'll rip it up for you later. But what I mean is it's about the responsibility. It's like Jared said, it's about the hard. I did the easy and putting the hard work, putting in the effort, but understanding the long-term is where you want to go and ultimately being responsibility for your decisions. And I challenge everybody, don't make that excuse. I mean, easy to hard is great, but I love that hard to easy, because then once you start it and once you enjoy it and expect to suck for several months, it's okay. We weren't born natural in anything. We've learned every single skill that we have, whether it's becoming an entrepreneur or becoming a better parent or becoming better at our health. This is all things that we can learn. So
yeah, I actually tell people all the time, like, do something every month that humbles you, like something that like that you're not that good at. Like you're like a rock star in one domain, like commit to doing something every month that you're actually like the weakest person in the room at, because it'll make you stronger where you're strong, because like it humbles you a bit and then you end up flexing this new muscle and eventually that new muscle builds and it gets really strong. So we do like these team challenges internally. It's the day of humble, and the team has to do something that humbles them that day. And then they share what that was, whether they can't dance for anything and they go do a dance lesson and they fall over their 2 feet, or singing, or anything. It could be like playing a sport, anything. Do something that humbles you, because it makes what you're doing that you're really good at even better, because you're grounded. So I love that.
Jared, last question for me. When you're talking to entrepreneurs or entrepreneur wannabes, what are some of the weaknesses that you see with entrepreneurs?
They haven't burned the boats. Like they're not all in. Mm-hmm. And that is the reason why. They fail. Like, yeah. I actually talk with this with our founders often, because some of our founders, they came with a napkin. Like that's it. It's like a concept on a piece of paper, right? And then
I thought when you were saying that earlier, they literally were trying to sell a new napkin. I'm like, that's great. I mean, shit. I was like, I got you now, man. A little, it takes me a minute, but
like they scribble idea on a piece of paper, and then they come and they pitch us, and they end up being, it's a good idea. The person's right. There's an interesting market to enter into. It's a good business model, and we're like, let's go. Let's co-found. And then we start to fundraise at a certain point, and we then fundraise, and the investors that are going to invest, they know the risk that we're taking, because like we are the infrastructure, like we are the company. So they recognize that, but they're like, what is the person with the napkin? What risk are they taking? Like they're coming with a napkin. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that you burn the boats. Like that's just so critical. Like you got to be all in. Like I tell our founders all the time, if you're in only if you get funded, then quit now, because no one's going to fund you if it's predicated on that. You need to be doing this with or without anyone or anything. And this is so critical for entrepreneurs to realize, like dependency equals death. So if you're dependent on anything but yourself, you're going to die. And I actually believe that about personal relationships too, like personal intimate relationships where there's a sense of dependency, it's not a healthy relationship. Like you want two independent people coming together to produce more together than they could on their own. But dependency is like 1 + 1 = -0.5. Like you're like leaning on each other too much. But yeah, any entrepreneur or someone that wants to step into entrepreneurship, burn the boats and just completely submerge yourself. It doesn't mean you can't be an employee by day and entrepreneur by night. Like that's not what I mean. Like that's cool. That might just be the practical path for you to get to where you want to get to. But you're like all in on entrepreneurship. Like you know that's where you're going. You have an entire game plan to make your side hustle your main hustle, and just jump right in.
All right, tenor, vibrato, opera man, bring it home for us here.
Oh, I got to wrap this baby up. I mean, I wish we could spend a lot more time with Jared, because, 10,000 entrepreneurs, I mean, that's a vision, everybody. I'm sure we could have gone into goal setting with him. I'm sure we could have gone into his core values, into his mission statement, into his catalyzing statement. I want everyone to go visit his website. Maybe you may be the next one bringing an idea on a piece of paper.
Not a napkin, an idea on a napkin. It's got to be a tech idea, right? We got to get honed in here.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's just an amazing thing. And I mean, young dude. What I like about more than anything else, Jake, is it's put in the hard work. Decide to put in the hard work today and think about the long-termism. And I love doing these shows on long-termism, because everyone has their own perspectives about it, but it always ends up coming down to the same concept, the same ideas. It's really about a vision. It's about creating impact. It's about creating success for others. And, there's a lot of what Jared is talking about. It's really the go-giver. I mean, he's giving himself to others. And at the same time, one of the most beautiful things for me is he's able to monetize for himself, and he's able to create value and create impact for others as well. So it's been an honor to have him on the show.
Jared, if we have an idea on a napkin, where can they go to submit and become part of the group?
Yeah, so we're doing a rebrand as we speak. So it depends on when this goes live. But if it goes live post-rebrand, it's going to be Project 10K.com, Project 10K. It's project build, scale, sell 10,000 tech companies over 10 years. And if it, and if that's not live yet, go to pitch 10x, P-I-T-C-H 10x.com. Submit your idea. It's free to submit the idea. The team will review it. If we see potential, we're going to invite you onto our daily show, which is like way cooler than Shark Tank, like way cooler, because it's literally entrepreneurs from around the world pitching their tech dreams. And I'd love to have people on there sharing their dreams and their visions. And maybe we'll be co-founding a company together. It'd be a lot of fun. So pitch 10x.com.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much, Jared. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.